You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and Keon with you today on this Friday. Obviously, the big story broke late last night after we were on the air. Josh Gordon entering a treatment facility, and to get an update on that and also just to hear where the Browns are on that, let's go to the podium right now and hear from the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
When did Josh inform you that rehab was going to be his next step?
We've talked several times, but I don't want to get into the specifics of it. I mean, obviously Josh is not here and doing what he thinks he needs to do for his life, which we support 100%. And I think after today, today's really the last Josh Gordon comment I want to make about that. I mean, I think what's best for our football team is that we move forward and move on. He's not going to be with us, and we wish him well, but we're moving forward. We're going to move on.
I got a couple people asking this, and I kind of wondered too. Kind of a valid question this time, because I know you don't want to talk about this very much, but with Josh checking himself into rehab, most people might look at that as like a positive step. So, you know, why does it seem like you guys are kind of going to be done with this?
You said a key thing, we seem like. I just think for me and for our team, for everybody involved, I just think of my goal is to make sure that we take care of the players that are here and the players that are practicing are working. And I care about everybody. You know, I think that's the seat I sit in, but at the same time, he's not here. So that's why we wished him well and want the best for him. And I think the most important thing I can do is make sure that our football team that are here, the guys that are practicing, the guys that are gonna play, the guys that are in the meeting room and working hard to get ready for a game, is that our focus and our attention to details right. So that's my main concern, and I think what we need to do is just close that chapter right now. You know, he's doing what he needs to do, and we need to do what we need to do, which is continue to move forward.
You guys were hopeful, and I understand why. You guys were hopeful that having him here during the suspension, you know, having this support system here for him would help. Does it add to the disappointment that it didn't work out, even though he was allowed to be here? You guys thought you had the means to get him through this?
Again, none of that matters right now. He's not. So let's just, again, I'm not going to answer any more Josh Gordon comments or questions. I'm done with it. You know, I'm going to coach our team that's here, and that's what I want to do. So no more questions about Josh Gordon.
Have you decided on your offensive line for Sunday?
Not yet. I'll get to that probably tomorrow before we have our mock game. But I think, you know, obviously you guys know the guys that have potential to play, and a lot of those spots are still be the same, and we'll see how everything else unfolds.
So to be clear, is a possible change in the offensive line performance-related or discipline-related?
That's a good question. I like the way you pose that. We'll see. It could be one or the other. I like that. That was good. is that it?
What happened to Seth DeValve, and do you know if he's going to miss an extended period of time?
It was in practice, and I don't know that for sure. Right now, I think it's kind of week to week, but we'll see how it goes, you know, see where he is.
Do you guys need to bring Connor Hamlet up for the game or make another movie at a tight end?
We'll have those discussions today, you know, and with Sash, myself, and Andrew, and Paul, and see what we need to do.
You talked about Cody's consistency in the past. Did you see that same Cody this week?
Yeah.
Any change in him?
No, none whatsoever. Matter of fact, he's probably ramped it up a little bit. You know, he's got a taste of it, and he went out and did some good things, and I think he knows that in order to do it again, you got to be even more into it, more focused, more driven, and I think he's done a great job this week as well.
Talk to talk to you about his arm strength. Is that any concern with him at all? I mean, we've seen him throw 30, 40 yard passes. Do you need him to be able to go deeper than that?
I mean, I think he can throw it deeper than that. I mean, we like to throw the ball down the field. I think you know that. So I think he can make all the throws that we need to make. So I think his arm is good enough to do what we need to do, and that's why he's here.
You, just in wrapping up the week a little bit, would you say anything that has happened to you guys this week, starting from, you know, Monday with Alvin to now? Have you noticed that any of these things have been a distraction to your football team, and how has the preparation been in spite of all that?
Not at all, because I wouldn't let anything become a distraction to our team. That's one of my jobs, is to make sure that our team is focused on what we need to do, which is play a game every Sunday. It's unfortunate we don't have any Monday night games or any of those things, but that's part of it, you know. But that's the most important job, one of them, that I have, is just making sure that we don't get caught up in any distractions. And again, our team leaders, and I think we've done a good job of doing that. The guys have had a real good week of practice. They've been focused. They've worked hard. And again, that's a tribute to our coaches and our players. And we're looking forward to playing this Sunday.
You still have that potential for those. So do you address these issues in front of the whole team, or how do you make sure these do not become distractions?
I deal with them. I think we don't sweep anything under the carpet. We deal with everything head on. And I think that's the only way to handle things that can happen. I mean, we don't run from it. I think we deal with them. I don't run from confrontations. I mean, when they happen or things happen, I think you have to deal with them as a head coach, as a leader. And that's what we do, and then we move forward.
Hey, Hugh, last week you had all those injuries, and then they kind of kept going on throughout the week. Do you feel like it's settled down a little bit, and maybe you're in a better position heading into this week just because you know where you're at with the roster?
Well, I know where we are, you know, but, you know, the injuries are going to keep cropping up a little bit here and there. Hopefully, you know, we'll get to where we have everybody back that's supposed to be back and out there. I think we're getting closer to that. But, you know, it's just that time of the season, you know, where you sometimes they hit you early, they hit you late, they hit you in between. We've just been unfortunate that we've gotten some injuries early in the year, but hopefully we'll get those guys back soon.
Has it been a challenge to kind of get this culture change and this accountability piece going in terms of what you're trying to do here in this roster?
You know, Mary, from that standpoint, I think we've got that part. You know, to a man, I would think the guys have worked hard that way as far as being accountable to each other, doing the right thing. Obviously, we had a slip up, you know, this past week. That's unfortunate, and that's not something that we want to have happen. And we've dealt with that, you know, as an organization and as a team. So we'll move forward. Hopefully that's a lesson learned for everybody else on how we conduct our business, and we'll continue to do so. Our guys are, you know, they've done a good job. That's all I can say thus far. I mean, it's we don't want any problems at the end of the day. But I think in this building, you know, in these meeting rooms and on that practice field, these guys have done a good job in giving me everything they have.
That's Browns head coach Hugh Jackson. And for today's show, we will take all the Josh Gordon questions and calls and comments that you want. And then after that, we're moving on, just like Hugh Jackson.
All right.
Moving on. It's unfortunate. I mean, this is
a kid. We should cut it off at 2 o'clock.
This is a kid that I personally, in my interactions with him, I've always liked. I've always rooted for. Obviously, he has got issues, and I'm glad he's going to take the opportunity to work those out, and I wish the best for him. I remember, you know, my last memory really of Josh Gordon, other than the touchdown against Tampa Bay and that play, but was the night that they had that Friday night scrimmage here at the facility. And he stayed late and signed autographs for everybody. He was the last person out there actually signing autographs for everyone. And I had my kids here. He came over, and my daughter, Arden, recognized, you know, the number 12. And she's like, is that whose jersey you have in our basement? Because I have, in addition to yours, Matt Wilhelm, I do have a signed Josh Gordon jersey in my basement. And I was like, yeah, it is. He's like, you have my jersey in your basement? And I was like, yeah, man, I've always been a big fan and rooting for you. He's like, really? He's like, dude, you got to take a picture of that and send to me. So I did end up showing him. He's like, that means so much to me that you, like, stuck with me through this, you know. And, you know, so he's a good guy. He obviously has issues and stuff that he's got to work out, and I wish him the best there. And it's disappointing, you know, as a fan, it's disappointing. But at the end of the day, what's really important is Josh having a good life, and hopefully he is able to do that. Much more important than whether or not he plays football for the Browns or for anybody else in the NFL.
Right, yeah. And the one thing that I immediately started to ponder was, what happened? You know, you're 4 days from getting back to the essentially one of the loves of your life, which is the game of football, to be able to go out there and back up all the words he's been saying all along about, you know, what this organization meant to him and being with his teammates and being in this building and actually being able to go out and do it, something that he hadn't done in, what, 18 months? You know, actually play a football game. And that's what really is, again, great for him to go get the help. Unfortunately, you know, for the Cleveland Browns, there's another storyline that does not really help us in any way, shape, or form. You bring a win to this city. So I just want to know what happened. What happened?
And I think that there's two ways to look at it. Obviously, if you have any sort of sympathy in your body, you feel for the guy because he's got a problem and
absolutely
take care of it. But as a football fan, it is a little disappointing because we were all excited to see what this receiving corps could look like. And
yeah.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think this closes the door on him. I think he is at heart a good guy. And if you take a step back, a lot of people that are 26 or 27 years old or however old he is have problems and overcome it and have successful lives. It's just that football is such a short lifespan of a career,
right,
that maybe football is in his rearview mirror. But hopefully he can come back. And I heard somebody say it. If it's not at the Browns, I mean, doesn't this just have New England written all over it? Like, he comes back after a year of rehab and he goes to New England and is able to stand straight and narrow there.
Yeah, I mean, it potentially does.
I mean, I just hope
who knows?
I hope he could stay on the straight and narrow for his own sake anywhere. But
yeah,
he does seem like a very likable guy.
He is.
And hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll be able to conquer his demons.
Yes, hopefully he can do that. And certainly we do wish him the very, very best. For the rest of this team, though, big game coming up on Sunday against the Washington Redskins, looking to get that first victory. On our show today, we'll continue to kind of preview that game, let you know what we've got. Dane Brugler will join us for his regular Friday feature at 2 o'clock, talking about the Browns rookies, what to watch for in college. We've got the Friday forecast. We've got the game predictions. There's a new sheriff in town. Yeah, boy. It's the same sheriff that's been there for a long, long time.
It's early, bro.
It is early. It is early. But the kid actually had a Stugatzian like week. By the way, the kid, Stugatz is what, 0-18 in his picks?
That's a little bit of Levitard exaggeration. He's actually like 0-14, I think. Levitard just he gives out the same picks in two different places, so Levitard then counts it as two losses, which I think is great. But yeah, I don't know.
It's amazing. You had a Stugatzian week yourself last week.
Not like that.
No, I mean, you didn't go over.
This guy has not won a game. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is pretty unbelievable. And speaking of not winning a game, the Europeans have not won at all in the Ryder Cup. The Americans up 4-0. And as Matt and I watched that video of the guy who came out of the stands to drain that putt, what a great moment that is, kid. I feel like you could have done that. I feel like that would have been a great moment.
You know what? I haven't seen it yet. I read
about
it.
What? Are you kidding?
You know, some of us were working yesterday.
15 seconds. It's on your phone. It's easily accessible. It's
you know, I'm not a technology expert, so I have read about it, and you know, it sounded pretty cool.
Yes, the guy, like, literally, they pull him out of the crowd. Justin Rose slaps a $100 bill down. They hand him some putter, which is really short. He's like, "This is a short putter." Gets over it, and boom, drain.
How far was it? 12 footer.
12, 15.
But it was a putt that Heinrich Stenson and Justin Rose were standing over and had missed.
Like multiple times
each.
Yeah.
I wonder if the guy was like a member there.
I don't think so. He just seemed like a rambunctious guy. And he hit it dead center. And if he didn't, it probably would have been 15 feet by. I mean, he crushed it.
That's my style.
But he hit it dead center and knocked it in.
Did jump up and go back.
It did jump slightly.
It did a slight jump, yeah.
That's my favorite.
The kid with the jump shot there. All right, so we got a lot to talk about here. 216-578-0850. Again, the Browns, Hugh Jackson saying pretty definitively we're closing that chapter, moving on. So I think anybody still holding out hope of seeing Josh Gordon in a Browns uniform, just put it out of your mind. And if something happens, great. But it certainly doesn't seem like that is going to be the case anytime soon or perhaps at all ever again. As Josh Gordon has checked himself into an inpatient treatment facility, and we wish him certainly the best with that. When we come back, we'll open up the phones, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, Kid, Merriweek.
DJ Khaled. Hey. Yeah. All I do is win. listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, and the kid. Let's go to the phone lines now. We'll start off with Lori in Stowe. Lori, welcome.
Okay, hi, guys. I really sympathize with Josh, except the thing is not what happened, but why? Why did this happen? I mean, did he know that he was going to fail a drug test? Did he suddenly get high the night before and think, oh, the heck with it? Did he just knew he was going to do this, but just waited to the last possible moment for some kind of miracle to occur? And why are the Browns so close-mouthed about it? You know it's going to get out. When it does, the Browns are going to look, like they have egg on their face again. This is the thing. Why does it have to be such a closed state secret?
Why does what have to be? What happened with Josh?
Why did Josh suddenly decide to get his life in order? He could have done that a month ago. He could have done it a year ago. Why, in this particular time, was it because the pressure was so much that he was going to be playing, so he got high the night before? I mean, why did it happen?
I have no idea.
Well, this is my question. Not to you guys. Maybe you guys don't know either, but just to the Browns in general. It's not specifically for you, but just for the Browns in general. I mean, you can't just say, well, we'll just move on. Oh, here's somebody who just, we're not going to talk about him anymore, even though we've been talking about him for 2 years. Just move on.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't care about him. It just means that they're not going to share it with you and me. This is not a football issue anymore.
It's a personal issue.
We're talking about trying to help someone in their life. And again, as football fans, we have the right to be frustrated, but obviously that takes a secondary role.
And here's another perspective to make it relevant to everyone. If your brother, sister, father, cousin were an addict and you go to work and you're with Susie at the water cooler or grabbing a cup of coffee, are you volunteering personal information about someone that you know is personally screwing up their life and affecting everyone around you? You're going to volunteer that information to just anybody at work?
No, I think
in today's world, it's the game of telephone. By the time that, it reaches, back to you, it's been broken down. He's flunked 27 tests and he got into, a DUI and he wrecked his car and he's wrecking his life and he's blown $1 million. Who knows? So why do people feel obligated? You don't share that about your family. Why would that? That's what this is in this building.
So what I would say is, look, the fact that it is now public that he's going to rehab, do you care about the specifics of the incident that went? Obviously, something bad. People don't go to rehab for fun.
Well, right. Like, I mean, I think there's a morbid curiosity about anything, and that's why we follow anything. But really,
that's not under the Browns to share that. If Josh Gordon wants to share what happened, that's up to Josh Gordon.
And I do say, again, and this is what makes him likable, it's not like he was hiding. He went on Twitter yesterday and said, I've got problems. I'm going to take care of them. And, you just want to root for the guy because he does seem like a nice.
He is. This is what he said on Twitter. Under some pressure and stress recently, had to take a timeout for myself. Sometimes you have to do what's best for you. Thank you, NFL Browns. See you soon. Thumbs up, Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I just hope that he can get to a place where he has a happy life, whether it has football in it or not. It just is amazing that who's so close to being back. And
it's amazing to me because this isn't the first thing this isn't the first time this has happened in the last couple of years with the Cleveland Brown. But the feeling that at least that, that I have or that I would think you as well, Matt, and you, the kid, about, Josh versus Johnny when you went through this with Johnny, it just seems like obviously Josh does have problems. He's going to rehab, but it just seems so different to me.
Well, it seems to me that Johnny doesn't care and doesn't recognize anything. Josh recognizes it, seems to care, and just can't control it.
Yeah.
Maybe Johnny can't control it either, but it doesn't seem like he cares at all.
Right, and I think from this point forward, Johnny being in and then being out showed a lot of people that he didn't care. And I think Josh Gordon, from this point forward, it's great that you recognize it. You took the action to go in. Now, how dedicated you are to that and what the next year is going to look like for him, and that's not even including Josh Gordon having anything relevant to the Cleveland Browns.
And maybe for him to have a successful life, it doesn't include football. That, you know, nobody right. wants to talk about that. Maybe he just realizes, you know what, he needs to be out of the limelight. He needs to go and
get back into art, which he was doing.
And maybe, you know? Here's the thing, for a lot of people, gambling, sex addiction, alcohol, drugs, there is a trigger. You know what I mean? It's, you know, but I mean, maybe football, because of maybe whatever substance he was abusing was introduced to him via or facilitated somehow through a relationship having to do football, another teammate, you know, either at Baylor, here, somewhere else. So every time he walks in this building where the focus is on football, it triggers him to, you know, associate with whatever it is he's struggling with. Because that's my only recollection for him to have to remove himself from a safe haven, which we believe to be true here in Berea. But yet this might be one of his biggest triggers. And be very honest, it's NFL players smoke marijuana. Okay, when you're getting tested twice a year, if you're not in the program, you know it's when it's coming.
Yep.
You're gonna do, if you know there's no cops on the road, are you gonna speed? Absolutely. If you know it's a fact that there's going to be no cops on the road, you are going to speed, okay? If you know you are not going to be tested, you are going to do things you're not supposed to. That is the truth, people, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a trigger for Josh Gordon being in this building around other players who might be doing it, playing video games with other players or Josh Gordon might be playing video games and only played video games when he's high on something, okay? Those are all triggers for him. He is now removing himself from life to be in an inpatient facility to get rid of all those triggers so that he can learn to function in this world again.
Yeah, and certainly hope that he can do just that. Let's go to the shot doctor. Shot doctor, are you with us?
Hey, there's a couple of things.
Can I just ask quickly, what kind of shots are you a doctor of?
Basketball.
Okay, excellent.
Yep, basketball, okay. One of the things that is bothersome to me, and I hold the Browns and Josh Gordon to the fire. Josh Gordon has never been in AA. Now, he's not Albert Bell. He does not have that resolve. And I know Albert pretty well. I played golf with him 50 times. So he's not that kind of guy. And Albert is the only one that I know that has ever kicked it by being in the Cleveland Clinic rehabilitation program for drug and alcohol when he was Joey Bell. Do you remember when he was Joey Bell?
Yes.
Okay, well, now he's Albert, right? But he kicked it, and he absolutely never took it from that point forward. And I was around him enough to know that isn't Josh Gordon. Now, Josh Gordon has proven that he doesn't have the resolve to do this on his own. I really have never known anybody other than Albert Bell who has been able to kick this without the support of an AA organization. And the Browns could have made that a condition.
That's not true. The Browns can't put that in a contract.
And you just said it yourself. You met Albert Bell, who did it himself, so what's to say that somebody else couldn't do it themselves?
First of all, that is not something that they can put in an NFL contract. They have to be – that's something you have to want to do.
And the shot doctor, clearly not a alcohol rehab doctor there. I mean
– I think the point is
– different people can do it different ways.
Of course. But I think, you know, for Josh, given that he was trying to do it on his own for so long and it hasn't worked, that's what he's doing, by the way. He's going into a rehab facility, and I'm sure when he comes out of that, there will be some type of protocol he will follow. You and I both have friends that we know very well who have been to rehab and are still, you know, they battle that every single day and been very successful.
Yeah.
But the NFL can't mandate that. Was anybody that you can't be mandated as a player to go to rehab?
No, you can't.
It's impossible.
But the one thing that I will say, and the closest thing to it, is going back to my time, and I don't know if anything's changed via the new collective bargaining agreement, but part of being in the drug and alcohol program is a mandated number of meetings with essentially a counselor, like an in-house counselor. So, you know, on a Tuesday, on your day off, you go and meet with this guy an hour, hour and a half, whatever it is, and he essentially creates a series of checks and balances for you, you know, avoiding triggers, you know, how are you mentally, emotionally, so on and so forth. And sometimes I've been around guys who thought it was good. I've been around guys who, you know, all the institutionalized way of thinking kind of fell on deaf ears. They figured, like, I'm in control. I'm okay. I'm just abiding by this. Otherwise, you fail to go to that is essentially the equivalent to a positive test. So, I mean, he's been in consultation type of situations before, but never enough so to be removed from life.
Yeah, and you know, he was in the program. If he had failed another test, that would come out, and maybe that will come out later, but he was getting tested all the time by the NFL and hadn't failed to anybody's knowledge. So it did kind of, I think, came out of left field for a lot of people. But look, at the end of the day, he's doing what he feels that he needs to do to get his life on track. 216-578-0850. Let's go now to Scott in Tampa. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan. I just want two comments here. The first young lady called in, and I think Matt was commenting on it too. So what happened? It seems like the timing of it seems to be part of the issue, and you can kind of read between the lines a little bit, maybe that he knew he had a test that might be coming up, and he knew he might not come clean, and maybe this was a way to come clean with it without getting a lifetime ban of some sort. I don't know if that's a possibility, but I mean, wanting to know exactly what happened, I don't think that's something that I care about much, but the timing of it seemed to be what seems egregious, and maybe other folks are interested in. I don't know what y'all think about, you know, that kind of possibility.
I really don't care, to be honest. I don't care what it is. I don't care what happened. The fact is that it has happened, and ESPN reporting right now that the Browns intend to part ways with suspended receiver Josh Gordon. So that's what an ESPN is saying. According to the stores, that's what they're going to do, and they're going to look to move on from him. So I don't know what that means. But I don't care what happened. I just want Josh Gordon to be okay. It is what it is, unfortunately, for all of us, but most importantly for Josh Gordon. So I don't care if he knew a test. It doesn't make any difference to me. Dan and Hershey Pa.
Afternoon.
What's up, Dan?
Can we talk about something else?
Please. Absolutely.
Yes.
Please.
Give it to us.
Please. Yeah. The thing, you know, that's the elephant in the room is a quarterback. And what I'd like to, you know, talk about is for the season now, I mean, everything's really been going wrong. Like, what's the best thing that could happen? I mean, we've already seen what's the worst thing that can happen. And I'm hearing a consensus of opinion about Cody Kessler that he's not the solution. I mean, is there a scenario where he plays really well and he turns out to be the guy? Is that even possible?
Of course.
And if not, I mean, could Robert Griffin III play again this year? Could he still be the person? Or
that
are we really
no.
looking for next year's draft? You know, what do you guys think about that?
All right, let's go through it. So somebody asked me a question on Twitter, and I'd like to get your guys' take on it as well. He said, name me one quarterback in the NFL that's successful that has an arm similar to Cody Kessler's. And the two people I thought of, one would be Drew Brees, who certainly doesn't have a cannon.
He's got a much stronger arm than Kessler, I think.
Did he at the beginning of his career? I mean, he's improved on it significantly.
He's improved on it significantly, but maybe, above average arm.
Yeah.
And would you say Kessler's arm is above average?
No.
No, it's average. Andy Dalton?
Maybe. And look, that's Hugh's guy, so if there's a guy to make him successful.
Who else is there in the NFL that, you know, if you went through the quarterbacks in the National Football League, where Kessler's just, we're talking arm. Now, there are things, when you saw, if you watch a tape back of that game, what you saw was incredible ball placement, and he was able to get things into tight coverage. But if you go, let's go through, you know, the divisions just quickly, because I think it's a valid point. There are certain things. All right, let's start in the NFL.
What about Alex Smith?
Alex Smith would be one, but sometimes I feel like he can hum it.
He can hum it. I've been with Alex.
He made a nice throw. I remember standing in the end zone where he squeezed one in.
I think with him, it's just he doesn't like to take chances, so he doesn't.
I think he's got a good enough arm.
He's not asked to take chances.
All right,
chances,
so
yeah.
Eagles, Carson Wentz has a better arm. Eli Manning's got a better arm. Dak Prescott has a better arm. Now, Romo doesn't have a cannon.
No, much better than that, though.
Kirk Cousins is probably a better arm. Vikings would have been Teddy Bridgewater, which would have been, you know, I think similar, but Bridgewater is a little more efficient on his deep ball. Bradford's got a better arm. Rodgers, better arm. Stafford, better arm. Cutler. Falcons, Matt Ryan, yes. Winston, yes. Newton, yes. Breeze.
So
Rams, basically, he's in the bottom rung. So what you've got to do to make up for that.
The bottom rung.
Yeah, but I would say.
How many rungs are there?
I would say similar to Dalton, though. I think that's fair.
I would say the only way that, in my opinion, that Cody Kessler ends up being a starting quarterback for a team that has playoff aspirations is if Hugh Jackson truly is the quarterback whisperer. And he was great with Dalton. He's been great with other guys throughout his career. But you have such a limitation in something that, you know, people say, oh, you don't need to have the strongest arm, and
I think
don't.
That's a reason why Cincinnati hasn't won a playoff game. If you remember a couple of those games against Houston, Dalton missed deep throws. That's not his forte, but he can guide you around. I think Cody Kessler can be a serviceable starter in this league if he maxes out his potential. But if you want him to be that guy, your guy, he's got to improve his arm strength.
I mean, he's played one game, so I hate to write somebody off, but in my opinion, if you're talking about a Super Bowl winning quarterback, I don't think it's him.
And he's got a better arm than Peyton Manning had last year. I will say that.
Okay, so if you give me Peyton Manning's defense from last year, yeah, then maybe he could win. But
here's the thing: if Hugh Jackson and Cody Kessler have the opportunity to work together for the next 3 to 5 years, which we all believe has a high probability of happening, I think he could become a serviceable starter in the NFL. But my whole point is, it's like when you're in the right system and you're with the right coach brings out the best in you, because the point that you made was, you know, if he maxes out his potential, you need to be in a situation that allows you, both as a player and with the right coaches and with Pep Hamilton, with Hugh Jackson, that give you the opportunity to maximize your potential. Because there are guys that aren't well coached enough that get by on talent or their arm for so long until the game chews you up and spits you out because you're not in the proper atmosphere to maximize your potential.
But let me say this. If he's that good that he can do that with Cody Kessler, you got to think next year. Let's say you bring in a DeShone Kizer. Because I'll tell you something. One thing that I've done is, because I feel like I personally, you know, was missed in my evaluation of Carson Wentz. And so I wanted to understand why. The Carson Wentz you see play for the Philadelphia Eagles, and anybody who doesn't believe it, I'll challenge you, go do it, take notes, and then tell me if you see the same thing. If you watch his three games with the Eagles, and you watch any three games at North Dakota State, his footwork is better, his quickness in the pocket is better. He is a different quarterback from skill set. If I had evaluated the three games of Carson Wentz that I see with the Eagles, he would have been by far the number one quarterback in the draft, even ahead of Goff, who I love, and I still think will be a good quarterback. So what I think is, if you get a guy like that with all those physical skills, and Hugh Jackson is that quarterback whisperer that could get the max out of Kessler, I think you look at what they've done, and I'm talking Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and John DeFilippo. Those three guys have done with Carson Wentz is unbelievable. And what Carson Wentz has done himself, unbelievable. So I still think no matter what, you look for a guy who has the potential to get all the way to the top and bring him along. What Cody Kessler can do is help either ease that transition or let you know, look, we have a guy that we can plug in here or there,
right,
and be a serviceable starter. The best scenario for the Browns is that he could be an Andy Dalton, but look, Andy Dalton hasn't won a playoff game. He could be an Andy Dalton, but we need to get the guy that can be the Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck.
Correct, and that's the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, realistically, when you look at our quarterback situations, you go get the guy next year and you have Cody Kessler in the proper atmosphere continuing to grow as a serviceable starter. You know, a la the situation in, even look at the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, when they had Alex Smith and you had Chase Daniel. You look at the Eagles now. Chase Daniel had a value in this league after starting but a few games, but being in the right situation, working with, you know, high-level quarterbacks, working with great coaching, and developing into a solid backup who's going to make more money than he can spend in a lifetime, not even playing a game that he loves, because there's always been the second guy. That is an advantageous situation, I believe, for the Cleveland Browns, where you go get your guy. He has to play with trial by fire, but you get the pick of the litter, and you have Cody Kessler, you know, who was handpicked by your head football coach, developing right behind him and ready one play away, so that there's not a significant drop-off from starter to backup, because they're both growing together. Even though, you know, a guy like DeShone Kizer, 6'4.5", you know, 6'5", you know, 235 pounds, the next Jameis Winston's going to be your guy.
Sure. That's what you're hoping to find. That's what you're hoping to find. Let's get one more quick call in here before we take our break right now. Chris in Columbus. Chris, welcome.
What's up, fellas? Happy Friday.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm not saying Josh Gordon doesn't have issues. Josh Gordon doesn't have issues with drugs. But in his case, it seems like the recent paternity test that came out.
Yes, and that's, yeah.
Might have taken him down a road where if he got tested, he probably was going to get dinged again. But I have a question for you.
And also, he found out yesterday that he is a father, so I don't know if that had something to do with the timing of it as well.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, conspiracy theory-wise, I'm wondering, the Browns had him under contract now because he didn't have that full season in 2014.
Correct.
They had him under contract until 2017, right?
He would be a restricted free agent at the end of this year.
He was going to be restricted.
Yep.
Now saying that because of his potential, you know, he actually does get himself right and, you know, he comes out of rehab a clean person, and it sounds like the Browns are probably going to let him go. Do you feel like he might have consciously made that decision, like, hey, you know, I'm going to be a father now. I don't even care. I want to get out of the Browns organization anyway. Let me just go ahead and do what I'm going to do, and, you know, they'll let me go, and when I get out of rehab, I'll get picked up by a team that I want to be with.
Absolutely, absolutely not, because what Josh Gordon was looking at staying here, right, if he stayed here, first of all, he loved Jim Brown, who went to Roger Goodell on his behalf. He loved the support system he had here. He loved that the Browns hadn't given up on him. Absolutely not. And if you want to just take even, let's just take a heartless look at it. His best path to money and quick money was playing well this year and getting a contract. Whether it be this year or next year, being franchised after that, he was either going to have the opportunity to leave or to get franchised and make a lot of money. So from a heartless standpoint, his quickest path to that was not going to rehab, taking another year off. It was playing football.
Yeah, and I think for, you know, Drew Rosenhaus, who is his agent, who's made all the comments in the world about what the Cleveland Browns and Jim Brown in creating an advantageous situation for Josh Gordon to succeed, the Haslams, Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson, to have him here, you know, under the circumstances, they were excited to have him back. They were. They welcomed him with open arms. Josh Gordon's comments continually to you in those little intimate situations, as well as situations on the football field with his teammates, time with the media, has said nothing but that he was going to be a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah, and that's what I think he wanted. That's what everybody wanted. Unfortunately, it is not going to happen. All right, when we come back, we'll continue on the phones, 216-578-0850. Still to come at 2 o'clock, Dane Brugler joins us here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, the Kid with you here on CBD. Coming up at the top of the hour, Dane Brugler from CBS Sports, our NFL draft expert. And now we're very happy to be joined in studio by one of his favorite prospects from a year ago, and a guy that he said was going to do big things for the Browns and already has, defensive end Tyrone Holmes in studio. Tyrone, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So far in Cleveland, what's kind of been your impression here 3 weeks into it?
It's been awesome so far. I mean, I'm just so happy to have this opportunity to be here. I mean, it's a cool environment in the locker room with a lot of young dudes, a lot of guys going through what I'm going through as far as learning the defense and what's going on. So it's been good.
So in limited snaps, you've already gotten a lot of quarterback pressure, started against Baltimore, and then this week, of course, you had the sack that led to, or the hit that led to the pick six for another one of the guys that was picked up by this team at the 53-man cutdown. How have you guys been able to get acclimated and be productive so quickly?
I mean, I think we're just going out there and just trying to take advantage of our opportunities that we're getting. I mean, we get put out there on the field, we're expected to make plays, and so, I mean, every snap is so important, and just try to go as hard as we can, and hopefully something good happens.
What have been your first impressions of just working? You talked a little bit about the defense, but working with Ray Horton, defensive coordinator, as well as Hugh Jackson now being your head football coach.
It's been awesome. I mean, obviously, Ray, he has a ton of football knowledge. I mean, just being around the guys is pretty cool, and just getting the opportunity to learn football from him has been a great opportunity. And then Coach Jackson, he's been awesome. I mean, just – the pregame talks and the talks that I've been able to be around him in, and just I'm excited about the opportunity to learn about football and life from that guy.
Certainly you like getting to the quarterback as well. How would you describe your style as a rusher off the edge?
I mean, first of all, I think it starts with my get off, and then everything happens from there. I think if guys try to just set me for speed, I can go power, and I think I'm a little stronger than guys would expect.
They threw Ronnie Stanley last week into Joe Flacco's back 2 weeks ago when he tried to stand you up there.
Yeah, so, yeah, and then just being relentless and never giving up. So, I mean, hopefully it'll turn into a sack this week.
How satisfying was it, though, to know that, you know, it was your pressure that led to the pick six there? And, you know, was that kind of like, all right, I've made it in the NFL type of a moment for you?
It was definitely cool. I mean, I was very, very happy for Brian to get that pick. I mean, we've kind of went through this whole journey together, you know, going into Jacksonville
yeah.
and then getting released and then picked up here. So I was very happy for him, and it was cool. It was a cool experience and cool moment.
I think for people that walk people that don't know you but will know you as Cleveland Browns fans, like through your process, where are you from? You know, where'd you go to high school, then to college, and again, you know, as you just talked about, going to Jacksonville, then getting released, and then ending up here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like just through my whole football journey, I just feel like I've been doubted the whole way. I mean, in high school, I wasn't recruited very heavily at all. I'm from a small town in Southern Oregon, and had three offers, FCS offers, and I ended up going to Montana. I loved it there. It was awesome. I played 4 years, didn't redshirt. Didn't get an invite to the combine, so I mean that was another thing. Just kept working, and the Jaguars liked me enough to draft me in the sixth round.
Yep.
Went there, was released after preseason, and was lucky enough to get picked up here.
I'm talking to some people down there, they're actually very surprised you got released and said that we got a good one, and so far you've proven that on the field. And now with the injury, you know, Nate Orchard's banged up, Nassib's been banged up, more opportunities for you going forward. How do you see your role expanding with this team?
Like you said, it's an opportunity, and I just feel like every time I go out there, I have to do everything I can to make the most out of it. I mean, it's an incredible experience to be here and to be able to say I'm playing in the NFL, so I just have to make the most of it.
Do you like having your hand in the ground more than standing up?
I mean, I'm more comfortable with it just because I've done it more often, but I mean, I think I'll be fine standing up.
Just get to the quarterback.
Exactly.
What do you like to do kind of in your spare time for people to get to kind of have a better picture of Tyrone Holmes, the guy?
I mean, I'm pretty boring. I'll binge watch Netflix series, and if I get a lot of time, I'll start reading or whatever, just hang out. I'm pretty simple. So.
Did you watch Game of Thrones?
I do. Yeah.
Trying to get Wilhelm on it. He wants no interest.
I don't have the time, man.
I didn't think I'd like it, but it's probably the best one out. Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's one. Mr. Robot.
Wife, kids. Mr. Robot? Come on.
Nah, no, that's
good. I got
to
get on that one.
Yeah, you got to get on that
I've
one.
I've heard about it. I haven't watched it though.
What's one you would recommend everybody to watch? Other than Game of Thrones, Matt Wilhelm.
Narcos is pretty good. I like
great
Narcos. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. A lot is made of whether it's you or Carson Wentz coming from the FCS to the NFL. How much bigger of a jump do you think it is for an FCS prospect versus someone that goes like Matt Wilhelm from Ohio State?
I mean, it's hard for me to say because I didn't play in the SEC, I didn't play in the Big Ten, but I think it's a jump for everyone coming from college. And I think at the same time, if you can play football, you can play football. It doesn't really matter where you came from or what you were doing before this. You know, it's translatable if you can play. So
it seems like there's more and more guys coming to the NFL from FCS, and the FCS teams are beating some of the FBS teams more and more regularly. So there's obviously a good brand of football being played there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that gap has closed quite a bit. I mean, you see every year a ton of FCS teams get those wins against FBS teams, and I mean, you don't really, when you're playing at that level, you don't really see yourself as less. So I mean, it is what it is.
Coming in now to the Browns, you guys are looking for your first victory. You've been very, very close each of the last 2 weeks, and I think there are a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of people in this locker room, that think you guys should be at least 2-1 right now. What do you have to do to get over that hump and get that first victory?
Right. I mean, you just look at it. It's a couple plays here and there, and we're 2-1. And so I think it's just being a little bit more consistent and making the plays that we can make. I mean, it's that fight towards the end of the game, and hopefully some breaks go our way this time and we end up on top.
And how about just, you know, Kirk Cousins and a very potent passing attack this week against the Washington Redskins. What has really stood out to you guys on film as you prepare for the Washington Redskins?
I mean, they're really good. I mean, they're talented on offense. They have some guys up front. They have really good left tackle.
Trent Williams.
Yeah, yep. and they're talented. And so, I mean, it's going to be a challenge, but I think we're up for it and excited for the opportunity.
Yeah, they haven't given up many sacks this year considering how often they've thrown the football. But yeah, you guys have gotten around the quarterback a lot. Last week, 26 pressures on the quarterbacks for the Browns defense. What is it about this defense that it's allowing so many guys to come in, and you and Corey Lemonnier, who we had on the show yesterday, came in at the same time that you did. You both made huge plays in that Miami game. What is it about this defense that's been allowing you guys to kind of do what you do best?
All right, I mean, it's the coaches putting us in the right places and giving us – the opportunity. I mean, if we're not getting the chance to get out there and get on the field, then we wouldn't have that chance. So it's the coaches and I think it's just the type of guys that we have on this team that are willing to go out there and want to make plays. And
so you're from Oregon, went to Montana. Are you much happier to be here in Ohio where it's going to get cold than you would have been down in Florida where it was going to be hot? Although you did have the worst part of Florida. I mean, you were there for training camp.
Yeah, it was hot. It was something I'd never experienced in my life. So, I mean, I'm a little bit more comfortable with this cold, and I think I'll be fine with the winter. So.
All right. Well, we certainly happy to have you on the show and happy to have you here with the Browns, and keep up the good work getting after the quarterbacks, and hopefully get your first win on Sunday.
For sure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me. Tyrone Holmes, our guest here in the Dog Bowl. When we come back, Dane Brugler, NFL draft expert from CBSSports.com, will tell you what to watch this weekend. And also, we'll have him give you a little bit of breakdown on some of those Browns rookies that continue to impress when we return here on CBD.